When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Fall is all about cozy comforts, but when you're prioritizing your health, it's easy to feel like you're missing out. With Hero Bread, you can enjoy all your fall favorites because they're made with Hero Bread sliced bread loaves, tortillas, bagels, dinner rolls, and more. Try their all-new Hero Noodles with 12 grams of protein and just 80 calories. You won't believe Hero Bread's options have 0 to 5 grams net carbs and are high fiber from the taste and texture. They've even got small batch drops of indulgent favorites like the popular Hero Croissant. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code FALL25 at checkout. That's FALL25 at HERO.co. All figures are per serving of Hero Bread. Contains 2 to 18 grams of fat per serving. See the product nutrition panels on hero.co for more information.
With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got you covered with comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting, confident looks you can count on. For over a decade, Mack Weldon has designed timeless, innovative menswear to help you move through the day with confidence. With the new Ace line, looking effortlessly sophisticated this fall is easy and comfortable. Stock up on crazy cozy sweatpants, shorts, and sweatshirts that elevate your style. They even have blazers, if you're lucky enough to grab one while they're in stock. Mack Weldon balances classic pieces with updated details to keep you looking sharp. Not flashy, just classic, always in style and made with the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code MACK25.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After midnight.
It starts the way most hauntings don't, not with a creaking floor or a shadow moving where none should, but with people, the kind who make their own darkness long before any spirit ever notices. For me, that darkness began in New Orleans, a place where the ground sweats secrets, where the air is thick enough to hold ghosts. Even as a kid, I could feel it. The pulse of the city like something alive beneath the cobblestones, humming through every clapboard house and wrought iron balcony. Ours wasn't one of the pretty ones. It was a slouching little box of a house wedged between others like it, half painted, half forgotten, and fully cursed. My mother called it a starter home. To me, it felt like a place that wanted to keep you forever. She was too young to be anyone's mother. Raised in a broken family of her own, she'd never been taught how to choose the right kind of love. By the time I was born, she'd already chosen wrong. Twice. Husband number two was the worst of them, a man who smelled of cigarettes and bourbon, who laughed too loud at his own cruelty, and whose anger could fill a room before he even opened his mouth. He wasn't the kind of man you wanted near your daughter, but in our neighborhood, the kind where broken things married broken things, he wasn't an exception. He was the rule. Every night in that house was a test. How quiet could you be? How still? Could you make yourself small enough to avoid becoming the reason he decided to break something? I learned early that silence was survival. So when the whispers started, I thought it was just my own mind giving up. They came softly at first, my name breathed in overlapping voices so close it tickled the air near my ear. Dozens of them, male and female, young and old, all whispering at once. They weren't angry, just insistent. I remember freezing in place, too scared to breathe. Then they stopped. Just like that, and I didn't tell anyone. You don't bring strange noises into a house already on edge. Besides, compared to my stepfather's voice when he was angry, these were practically a lullaby. Then things started to move. A pencil rolling off the table when the air was still. A marble that appeared from nowhere, bouncing once before hitting my ankle. An eraser flung across the room, tapping me on the shoulder. It never hurt. Just reminded me that I wasn't as alone as I hoped. But again, I said nothing. Because in that house, attention was more dangerous than any ghost. So I told myself it was the wind. Or maybe I'd imagined it. That's what kids do. They make stories to explain what adults refuse to see. And then one night, the story became real. I was 9, sitting cross-legged on the old plaid couch with a library book in my lap. Reading was my escape, a way to disappear into other lives. The house was finally quiet. My mother and her husband were asleep. The only sound was the slow tick of the clock and the faint hum of a window unit fighting the Louisiana heat. Then the air changed. It went heavy. Like the moment before a storm breaks, my skin prickled, every instinct screaming, look up. I did. And standing in the hallway was a man. Not solid. Not see-through either. His body wavered like heat above asphalt, a shimmer that bent the light around him. Blonde hair stuck up wild, his eyes too big for his face. He wore a white t-shirt and shorts. Ordinary. Human. But something about him wasn't. He looked at me as though I was the one who didn't belong. My mouth opened, but no sound came out. I couldn't scream. I couldn't move. Then, as calmly as if I were invisible, he turned and walked down the hall into the bathroom. I stared at the page in front of me, heart hammering. I told myself not to look again, that I hadn't seen anything. But curiosity has a way of betraying fear. When I finally lifted my eyes back to the hallway, the bathroom door was half closed, and then slowly a head appeared around the frame, just the head. His eyes locked on mine, wide and unblinking. His hands gripped the door frame tight, the knuckles pale. He wasn't smiling. He wasn't frowning. He was studying me. That's when my voice came back. I screamed, long, raw, enough to tear my throat. The thing jolted, then leapt backward. For a split second, it hung in the air, legs moving like it was running, and then it ran through the air down the hallway, straight through the closet door at the end, through it. I saw it vanish. By the time my mother and stepfather burst out of their room, I was sobbing, pointing, gasping out what I'd seen. They laughed, told me I was dreaming, told me to get to bed before I got another reason to cry. Their door closed again. The laughter stopped. The silence came back. I didn't sleep that night. Days later, the old woman who lived next door stopped me outside. She said her husband had died not long before we moved in, but that he still visited her. In spirit, she said, smiling like that was something comforting. I nodded, pretending to agree, but deep down I knew that what I'd seen wasn't her husband. It wasn't anyone's husband. It didn't feel lost. It felt hungry. After that, the house never felt empty again. I could sense him even when I couldn't see him. The air would grow still. The lights would flicker. Once, when I was doing homework, I heard the sound of slow footsteps behind me. When I turned, there was only the quiet. I learned to live with it. The same way I learned to live with everything else. You adapt. You ignore. You survive. But the thing about darkness is, it doesn't just leave when you do. It follows. When I was 13, he died. The man who'd made my mother's house a living nightmare. Drunk, alone, and angry, he drove his truck straight into a tree. They said he never hit the brakes. At his funeral, people cried like they'd lost a saint. I remember sitting in the pew and thinking, if I could get away with it, I'd dance on his grave. After the service, everyone walked back to the family home. I stayed. The grave was freshly dug, the coffin half-covered, the dirt piled beside it. The trees around the cemetery whispered in the breeze, and for the first time in my life, I felt unafraid. Then, from the edge of the woods came the sound of something moving. A big black dog stepped out of the trees. It walked straight to the grave, tail low, ears flat. It didn't look at me. It just stopped beside the hole, turned its head, and lifted its leg. Right there on top of the casket. When it finished, it turned to me, held my gaze for a moment, then disappeared back into the woods. I stood there in silence, the smell of damp earth and pine around me, and felt something deep in my chest finally unclench. If that was a sign, I understood it perfectly. For the first time, I believed in justice. When I left that cemetery, I thought I was free. For the first time in my life, there wasn't a shadow in the next room or a threat behind the door. The silence felt like peace. But freedom, I've learned, doesn't come from leaving a place. It comes from leaving the weight that place put inside you. And I hadn't done that yet. The haunting didn't stay behind in that sagging little house. It came with me. Not the ghost of a man, not even the whispering thing that had run through the air, but the energy of everything that had happened there. The fear, the resentment, the helplessness. I carried it like a second heartbeat. Every house I moved into after that felt slightly wrong. Doors would rattle when the windows were shut. I'd hear soft knocks from inside the walls, as if something wanted to remind me it was still there. Sometimes it was smaller things. The TV turning itself on, a drawer sliding open while I brushed my teeth. I told myself it was stress, bad wiring, coincidence. But the pattern kept following me, and every time I tried to pretend otherwise, it found new ways to make me pay attention. By the time I was in my 20s, I'd started to think maybe the problem wasn't the houses. Maybe it was me. And maybe, just maybe, the same energy that had drawn my stepfather into my mother's life was drawing people like him into mine. The man I was seeing then was handsome in the kind of way that blinds you, confident, protective. That was the word I used at first, but protection can turn into possession without warning, and soon it did. He wanted to know where I went, who I talked to, what I was thinking. It felt like being a kid again, tiptoeing through my own home. I told myself it was love. That's what I'd been taught love looked like, fear wrapped in attention. One night, we went to a dinner party, nothing dramatic, nothing unusual, just friends, music, wine. Across the table, someone made me laugh, a harmless joke, and I saw it in his eyes immediately. That flash of jealousy that doesn't need words. I knew there'd be a reckoning later. We drove home in silence. He didn't yell. He didn't have to. The quiet was worse. When we got back, he stayed up watching TV with the volume low. I went to bed alone, trying not to think about what might happen when he decided to follow. At some point, I drifted off, and then I woke up. At first, I didn't know why. The room was pitch dark, the air still. Then I smelled it. Sharp and sweet, like citrus peel crushed between your fingers, oranges, so strong it filled my throat. I rolled onto my side and froze. Someone or something was standing at the end of the bed. It was shaped like a man, but taller, much taller. The ceiling light caught nothing, no shine, no reflection. It absorbed it all. A shadow so deep it had weight behind its shoulders, something moved, long shapes that curved outward like wings. Not feathers, not smoke, something in between. It didn't move toward me, it didn't speak, it just stood there, watching. For a moment I thought my mind was breaking, that I'd finally gone too far into the fear I'd been feeding for years. But then the smell grew stronger, stinging my eyes, and I realized this wasn't inside my head. The air itself had changed. I turned my head slowly toward the doorway and nearly screamed. My boyfriend was standing right beside the bed. His face was blank, his eyes wide open, staring at me but not seeing me. His skin looked gray in the light. I whispered his name. Nothing. I pointed toward the foot of the bed. Do you see that? He didn't blink. He just turned and walked out of the room without a sound. The thing with the wings stayed. I pulled the covers over my head like I was a child again and started praying. Not any particular prayer, just words, fragments, whatever came out. I don't know how long I stayed like that before sleep finally dragged me under. When morning came, the room was empty. No smell. No shadow. My boyfriend was gone. I packed before he came back. By the end of the week, I'd left the state. And 2 days later, a therapist called, said he'd given her my number, said he wanted to work on things together. I told her no. She paused. Then she said quietly, "Good. If you see him again, run." That's all she said before hanging up. For a while after that, I wondered what she knew that I didn't, what he might have told her that made her voice sound that way. But the truth is, I didn't want to know. I'd already had my warning, and that shadow, that thing that smelled of oranges, had given it to me. Whatever it wasn't random. It felt deliberate, almost protective, in the way a fire alarm is protective, shrill, terrifying, impossible to ignore. I moved again, started over. New city, new job, new name on the mailbox. For a few months, the quiet felt clean. I didn't hear voices. I didn't see movement in the dark. Then one night, I walked into my new apartment after work and caught the faintest trace of that same citrus smell. Not strong, just a ghost of it, fading fast. And instead of fear, I felt calm. It was like something checking in to make sure I'd stayed gone. After that, the pattern changed. The strange things never disappeared completely. Little flickers at the edge of vision. Doors that creaked once and then stopped. But they lost their menace. I stopped trying to chase them away. Because the longer I lived, the more I began to understand I wasn't living in haunted houses. I was living in haunted versions of myself. But until I faced the past that built me, I was always going to see its reflection staring back through the dark. I stopped running from the strange after that. Whatever had attached itself to me wasn't something I could outrun. It was a part of me, woven into the fabric of who I'd become. Maybe it always had been. And once I accepted that, things started to make sense. It wasn't about the houses. It wasn't about Louisiana or the miserable men or the graves in the woods. It was about energy, what we give off, what we invite back in. I'd spent my whole life surrounded by chaos, and chaos had learned my name. That's what darkness does. It recognizes its own reflection and follows it home. There were nights when I'd wake up and feel something shift in the room, a ripple in the air, a whisper that brushed the edge of sleep. It never scared me anymore. If anything, it felt familiar, like an old song you can't remember the words to but still know the tune. I'd whisper into the dark, "I know you're there," and the room would go still again. Sometimes I think that acknowledgement was all it wanted. When I think back on my childhood, I don't just remember the fear. I remember the little girl who tried to survive it. The girl who hid behind books and believed that somewhere out there, life had to be better. That little girl saw ghosts and monsters and cruelty and still kept her heart open. I think about her a lot, about how she saw something in that hallway all those years ago and survived anyway. And I think about the black dog that walked out of the woods and urinated on a grave. Because even now I believe that was the universe itself speaking. A sign that the past was being wiped clean in its own crude, perfect way. And then after the funeral, I didn't go back to New Orleans for a long time. The city that raised me had become a museum of ghosts, every street corner holding a version of me I didn't want to meet. But distance doesn't mean disconnection. When I finally did return, years later, it felt like stepping into a photograph that had been waiting for me to reappear. The house was still there, different owners, new paint, but I could feel it from the sidewalk. The weight of the memories pressed against the walls like something trapped inside, I didn't go in. I just stood there until the air grew heavy and the street lamps flickered one by one. It felt like acknowledgement, like it was saying, "You made it out." Sometimes, late at night, I wonder about the things that visited me. The voices, the man in the hallway, the winged figure in the dark. I used to think they were random. Now I think they were teachers. Each one appeared when I needed a push, a warning, a moment of truth. The man in the hallway forced me to understand that there was more to this world than what hurt me. The black dog reminded me that justice finds its own way. The shadow with wings, whatever it was, made sure I finally left before someone else could destroy me. They weren't evil. They were mirrors. Sometimes I think the dead, or whatever exists beyond death, reach into our lives not to scare us, but to course correct us, to shake us awake before we become another echo in the dark. I still feel them sometimes in the soft thud of footsteps behind me when no one's there, in the flicker of a light bulb that shouldn't flicker, in the sudden scent of oranges drifting through an empty room. But now, instead of panic, I just breathe, because I know what it means. It means I'm still being watched over, or maybe just watched, and I've learned to be okay with that. I used to think hauntings were punishments. Now I think they're communications, some soft, some violent, all trying to tell us something we refuse to hear. We build our lives on top of bones, history, heartbreak, maybe all the strange things people experience, the knocks, the voices, the cold spots. They're not signs of the dead at all. Maybe they're the world's way of reminding us that nothing ever really goes away. Not pain, not memory, not energy. It all lingers, waiting for acknowledgement. I think back to that moment in the living room, the child me, staring into the hallway, too afraid to move, and I realized that was the first time the world showed me its hidden face. Since then, I've seen too much to ever stop believing. There's a rhythm to it all. Every time I've fallen into darkness, something has come to pull me back out. A whisper, a smell, a shadow. They never come twice in the same form, but they always arrive when the air starts to thicken, when the past threatens to repeat itself. And call it instinct, call it spirit, call it whatever you want, but I know it's real. I don't know where those things go when they're not here or what they want from me. Maybe they don't even exist in the way we think of existence. Maybe they just cross our path for a heartbeat and keep moving. But sometimes I wonder if the world beyond ours isn't some far-off heaven or hell. Maybe it's right here, layered just beneath this one. Maybe every heartbreak, every scream, every prayer ever spoken still vibrates in the air, too faint for most people to notice. And maybe those of us who've been broken open by pain are the only ones who can still hear it. That's not something I fear anymore. When I see the lights flicker as I walk into a room, I don't flinch. I smile, because I know that once upon a time I was a little girl who lived in a house full of shadows, and those shadows never stopped watching over her, even when they scared her half to death. Maybe they still do. I don't need to understand what they are. I just know they're real. And I know that every time one of them crosses my path, it's not random. It's a reminder. A reminder that I survived. A reminder that the past didn't win. And maybe most of all, a reminder that even the darkest presence can lead you back to the light. When people ask if I still believe in ghosts, I tell them yes, but not the kind that wear sheets or rattle chains. The ghosts I know live in memories, in patterns, in the energy we refuse to release. They follow us until we face them. So when the world grows quiet and I feel that familiar hum under my skin, I don't reach for the light switch anymore. I just whisper, "I hear you." And in that silence after, I swear something whispers back. Maybe it's the echo of every version of me that survived. Maybe it's the unseen world pressing its hand against the veil. Or maybe it's both. Either way, I listen, because I've learned that the most terrifying thing about the dark isn't what's hiding in it. It's realizing it knows your name, and somehow that knowledge just doesn't scare me anymore. It comforts me, because if the dark knows my name, then so does the light.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now, so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
The holidays are here, and that means it's the most wonderful time of the year to save with Rakuten. Use Rakuten to stack cash back at your favorite stores on top of holiday sales. That's savings on savings. With Rakuten, you can get cash back on gifts for everyone on your list. From toys for the kids, to kitchen gear for the person who loves to cook, to electronics for everyone. You can even save on something for yourself. Just shop the stores you love, and cash back is automatically added to your account. And you can get paid with gift cards, PayPal, or check. Or eligible American Express card members can even choose to earn membership rewards points instead of cash back. It's truly a no-brainer. Join for free today and get a new member bonus after minimum qualifying purchases. Just go to Rakuten.com, download the app, or install the browser extension. That's Rakuten. Terms and conditions apply.
Extra Value Meals are back. For just $5, get a savory and sweet sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles, plus hash browns and a coffee. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.